So what was the turning point in my life? So the way I started to fight back against depression was by being honest. It was Thanksgiving of 2017, first Thanksgiving since I had graduated college. I went to CVS and I met a cashier, and I just knew right away this person had a good energy to him. I was in pain and I was looking for answers. And after we had a long conversation, I asked him, if you knew anybody who was struggling with depression, what books would you recommend to them? And he recommended me two books, The Power of Now and Journey of Souls. These two books became a huge guide and survival tool for me to keep going. The Power of Now is a very powerful book for anybody because it works at a spiritual and scientific consciousness level. So it's not something, you don't have to be a religious person to get something out of it, and you don't have to be a scientific person to get something out of it. What this book taught me many things, but one of the things that really helped me with was understanding how to separate my thoughts and feelings from my just being. I know that sounds hella, you know, monkish, but you know, let me explain. You know, it's the feeling of you're about to walk into a social group for the first time and you have this heavy feeling in your stomach, you're sweaty, you're hyperventilating, you're super anxious. So the way this sort of mindfulness consciousness works is being able to identify what those feelings are. But first, you step back from them. You take a couple deep breaths, per se, and then you acknowledge, hey, it looks like, you know, I'm having these thoughts that I don't belong here. These people are better than me. This feeling of worthlessness, this heaviness, this anxiety. The key is we're acknowledging those feelings. We're not trying to tough it out, so to speak, and just ignore it, because that doesn't help. It'll continue to fester. We're acknowledging, we're being honest with ourselves that there is pain. We are feeling pain. But what the idea of consciousness work is that I'm able to step back from the pain, look at it, observe it for what it is, and then I can make the choice whether these feelings, these thoughts are valid or not. And it's the type of thing that took a ton of practice. For me, I would journal days, weeks, months. So the job I was working at the time, when I was at the cashier, basically, and if someone came up to me, if a coworker, you know, said something to me I didn't like, or if I just felt uncomfortable for any human encounter, whatever, I would literally I had a pen and paper right next to my cash register, and I would start writing down, I'm feeling this right now, this situation. And the more I started to do that, the more I started to understand where it was coming from, because it's all about getting deeper, right? You know, for example, in journalism, one of the things that was true with me was I went out of my way to meet a ton of people in journalism, whether it was a member of the National Association of Black Journalists and meeting tons of journalists at the conventions, meeting them at my internships. But I had always struggled to stay in touch with these people, and it was painful, but I was only looking at it on the surface. I thought, well, I've always been just bad at staying in touch with people, or, you know, it's their fault because they never want to respond back, and it's emotionally exhausting just to keep talking to people in general. But my therapist and my spirit mentor, this cashier that I met at CBS that day, who is now my spirit mentor, they helped me to understand it's time to go deeper. Let's find out what's behind that, because you won't be able to heal your pain just by staying on the surface, but that takes work. So in my case, as I started to continue to journal and be honest with myself, which I should say was very difficult because it meant admitting a lot of things about myself that I wasn't comfortable admitting. It made me feel very vulnerable, and it made me not want to leave the house. I felt weak. But here's the thing. acknowledging that you are in pain does not make you weak. The first step to fixing any problem is identifying that there is there. And it was because I decided to take that step that I can say, you know, as of the time of this recording, I've really been able to finally get on a consistent pattern of reaching out to my contacts and not being bummed out whether they respond or not. Because what I am realizing in my journey is that I have always been afraid to admit that I need help. The real reason why, at an unconscious and conscious level, that I've been avoiding these people is because I've never been able to be honest with myself about the fact that I've always looked at me asking people for help somewhere deep down as a weakness, and it affected my actions. You know, my therapist told me a while back, sometimes I sound like I'm in an interview when I'm talking to him as opposed to, you know, being honest with them. And by that he meant, you know, I sound like I'm trying to identify the issue and solve it, but not being honest about what I'm really going through. And the reality is, a lot of the time I'm in pain, I'm insecure, I'm nervous, I don't know if what I'm doing is going to work out. But once I started to embrace that, then I was able to start doing the real work. You know, that has allowed doing that type of work when I'm journaling, going from I feel like, you know, I feel anxious because I feel anxious about picking up the phone and calling that friend. Well, it slowly started to turn to, well, it appears that I am feeling anxious about having that conversation with that friend. See, you're giving your feelings validation, but at the same time, you're not. You're identifying it. You're acknowledging that it's there. But with meditation, like when I started downloading the Headspace app and I started doing meditation a lot, guided meditation, it allowed me to feel comfortable with just being present and letting thoughts and feelings move, but in a way where I was able to kind of still be myself without being overwhelmed with all the darkness and pain that depression puts into our bodies and in our minds. And that's what I started to do on a consistent basis. I would be at work always asking myself these four questions. What am I seeing here? What new points of view can I see here? What am I supposed to see? What is there for me to see? Because being the power of now is all about being present. It's all about being in the now. The anxiety, a lot of that stuff comes from trauma from the past, fear of what's going to happen in the future. But the art of being in the now is fully being like water. Water, I'm not going to give the whole Bruce Lee quote, but it's all about being here now, being in that present moment. That itself is a form of spirituality. And that was one of those things that my spirit mentor, my therapist, as well as me doing meditation and journaling, practicing this mindful stuff in and out of sessions and on my own free time, you know, was very helpful in my recovery, you know, but it's painful. And I want to let people know it does get worse before it gets better. See, we're talking fall of 2017 to summer of 2018. You know, during this fight with depression, I lost 30 pounds. I lost most of the hair on the front of my head. I had insomnia. I struggled to fall asleep. And when I would fall asleep, I would sleep for 10, 12 hours and still be exhausted and still struggle to get out of bed. It was difficult for me to concentrate on finding a job, doing anything productive. And I was scared of being around people because I always felt like I was in danger that something bad was going to happen. And for the first time in spring of 2018, I felt suicidal. I wanted to take my Ford Escape, drive up Route 2 or Route 95, pull over and just stand in traffic and wait for somebody to hit me. I was terrified because that was the first time that I had ever felt that way. I knew people who had committed suicide before, like the Kate Spades and the Robert Williams of the world, but I never thought that would be me. I thought I was too driven, too goal-oriented for that to happen to me, and I thought that people who did that were just quitters. But when I realized it was happening to me, I started to think about what was going on that led up to that point. And it was the fact that I felt like I was letting the people closest to me down. I was struggling to, you know, get my life together, media-wise, relationships, family-wise. My mom would give me a list of groceries to get, and I wouldn't be able to get half the stuff right because there was just so much darkness and shit going on in my head and my spirit. I could not focus. And it was painful because I saw how disappointed she was. And with all the people who had been rooting for me and wanting me to succeed and putting effort into me, I felt like me giving it everything I had wasn't enough. It took everything I had just to get out of bed and make my bed. That's how hard depression was for me. It was severe. And I felt like, you know, my mom and my dad, everybody around me who spent money financially, their time, etc., I just felt like, you know, I was more of a burden to them, that they'd be better. My mom and dad would be better off not having to worry about me anymore because I was just the deadbeat at this point. I was the kid that had the aspirations after college and just fell off. It was very tough for me, and it was the first time I had ever cried, you know, since I became a teen. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with crying, but that was new for me. I'm an emotional guy, but I never went that deep. And so I can tell you right now, it does get worse before it gets better. You know, it made me doubt my rehab during this time. I remember I was still, you know, even though I didn't have a full-time job in media, I was working as a sideline reporter for Boston Neighborhood Network. But it was tough to concentrate on the game. I was always in a sweat. I was always anxious. There was one time I was doing a play-by-play game for Harvard, and it was the worst game I had ever called. I was missing touchdowns, PATs, and I remember at one point even the play-by-play came into my room, and he was just looking at me like, "Are you good?" And everybody in the room was just like, "This guy's not okay." And I just remember leaving that gig that day, going into my disposable job, like, is this really the end of me? Like, am I just, you know, was this just 22, 23 years, just a good run, and now it's time to just, you know, kill myself? It was painful with the rehab I was trying to do and seeing how dark it was getting. It was rough. It appears I feel heavy about calling my friend I haven't spoke to in 2 years. See the difference between that and I feel about it. Now, not to get too repetitive, but identify, observe, you don't have to analyze, and then take the action. That's how you get control over depression. But it takes practice, and practice. But I should also say I needed more than that. You know, I got a new therapist who I started seeing in fall of 2017, and I was ready to finally be honest with the therapist. I had seen half a dozen therapists to this point, and you know, it was a combination of things, but there was more work that needed to be done. But post-college, I had been out of, you know, the millennial sphere. I was working a disposable job in a very, very old demographic. So most of the people there weren't my age. So I felt very alone and confused, right? In college, I was with all these kids my age. So we would go through the tough times together and the good times. I would see how they studied, when they partied, when they ate. What exam was hard, what assignment was, you know, crazy. That kinship was so important to me in my Colby Sawyer days because I felt like I had a real family. I don't know what college would have been had I had been a commuter and not been able to be there with, you know, with so many people and the ones, you know, college colleagues that are listening right now. I'm so thankful we got to go through that together. Seriously, but you know, back to this. So for me, at this point where I am starting to get deeper into my rehab in this early 2018, late 2017, I wanted to know, am I the only one who's struggling with anxiety and depression? And if not, how are these people healing? How are they going about trying to live a healthier, happier life full of fulfillment? So I joined a millennial Christian fellowship group so I could see different points of view, a healing group where I could see what type of environment, what it looks like. I joined an SGI Buddhist group as well for the same reasons, to be around people my age, young, hungry, maybe in pain, wanting to grow. And it was a blessing because in those meetings, I saw people who were very honest with themselves. They were honest about their depression, their anxiety, their pain, their doubts about the world and where they fit in with it. And that really helped me because depression feeds off of loneliness, whether it's physical, spiritual, or mental. So to be in an environment on a weekly basis where I was with people going through the same stuff as me, it really started to quell back the darkness that is depression. It helped me realize that I'm not alone and it's okay to not be okay. I can heal and I can heal with people who are willing to welcome me with open arms despite my condition. I didn't choose to be depressed. I was a kid who wanted to be on ESPN, and everybody who was with me during those days knows I put in all the work for it. So this whole stigma of we wish this upon ourselves, or, you know, depression's only real if you talk about it. I was in D.C. I was at 2 top 10 news markets in the country in 2 years, and it didn't, and I was in pain. There's times when I was late to my internship, and when I did get back from my internship, I crashed. I had no energy. I was drinking. I was eating junk food. I wasn't living a healthy lifestyle, and it was worse because I tried to ignore the pain. But see, when you ignore the pain, it has a way of biting you in the ass at an unconscious level. So don't ever listen to that nonsense, but I'll address that a little later. But the most important thing about this is group healing is huge. So I, 12-step programs, you know, spiritual help groups, that was huge for me in my recovery. And I took it seriously. And I was slowly but surely able to be honest in those groups. I talked about my anxiety, my depression, my reason for being there. These people, their stories and how they embraced and treated me gave me more energy to live and survive, made me realize that, yes, it is okay to not be okay. It is okay to not know what you want to do for the rest of your life. It doesn't make me any less of a person than anybody else for suffering with depression, anxiety, or suicidal thoughts. Depression is an invisible intellectual disease that right now is the number one cause of death for teenagers and young adults like myself. But see, the thing is, when we talk about our mental health, we save lives. Because it was a stranger's struggle with depression that inspired me to take my depression seriously. I'm talking about my spirit mentor. And then it gets better. Because as I started to really start to, you know, take, you know, and feel better throughout the rehab, I was able to go from my disposable job to a corporate job thanks to my college roommate and great friend of mine. During that job, it wasn't media, but I took the job because at the time, you know, I saw it as a playground. You know, there was still fear of whether in my rehab, whether I was ready to attack broadcast media. But by asking myself the questions, where can I achieve the most growth? Where can I get the most new points of view? This, that, and the third. It was going to be to take this corporate job, a more fast-paced environment, an opportunity to be in an environment with people my age, to see how they're living, what the way of the world is for people my age demographic. It's ironic because at this point, I still thought sports broadcasting was going to be the only path. But during my time at this corporate job, I was exposed to so many people who, my coworkers and so many customers my age, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, etc., who just like me, were struggling with anxiety, struggling with depression, struggling with suicidal ideologies. I remember this one sweet old lady, I was sitting in the car with her for an hour, and, you know, she was telling me how she had a daughter around my age, and she was struggling with Lyme disease, and she was very depressed, cutting herself, burning herself. See, I realized that, I'm realizing now that authenticity is what brings people together. Not that fake Instagram, you know, 15-second filter highlight cut. The reason I was able to connect with so many people at this level is because I was starting to be able to be more authentic and honest about my own thoughts and feelings. It brought me so many people close to me. I have friends now who are in rehab, who are getting treatment for their own mental health because I was one of the first few people that they could really be honest with. And I say the same for the customers at Enterprise who, you know, were kind enough to share their stories with me. But a lot of them told me the same thing. They don't have a safe environment of people where they can have those conversations with. And I was one of the few only people they were able to have that conversation with. And that was devastating to me because one of the most important parts of my journey was being able to share that with people. In 2018, I told my mom, I sat my mom and my father down. It's the most difficult conversation I've had to this day. And I told both of them, listen, I am presently struggling with depression and I have struggled with suicide. I am battling suicidal ideologies. I thought about taking my own life not too long ago. And I'm trying my best, but I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to be all right. I don't have the answer right now. And I had hid the fact. I've been seeing a therapist multiple therapists since high school. But I was always running and hiding that from my friends and my family, and that just made it worse. So it took years before I could finally be honest with them because I was afraid that they would reject me, that they would cut me out of their lives, that they would see me as a problem child. But in my rehab process, I realized I need to be honest with myself. And being honest with myself means being honest with my family and friends. And if they have a negative connotation to it, then I might have to distance myself from them. But people who really care about you and have your best interests at heart won't distance themselves from you when you tell them you're in pain. And, you know, to my surprise, my mother was very open and very supportive, and she's been huge on the whole mental health journey ever since for myself and for her. So her boyfriend was a huge support for me, and he's a mentor of mine and a great friend as well, and I appreciate him so much. And my father, when I told my father that I was struggling with depression, that was scary because he's such an old school alpha dog. You know, like my father's from Haiti, and, you know, in the Black community, the stigma against mental health is so much stronger. Like, we think that, you know, it's not real. You know, we're not really depressed. We're just sad and we're just being babies. But we know that's not true. But surprisingly, you know, my dad was very gracious. And he put his arms around me and he said, I'm always going to have your back no matter what. And I love you and I'll always be there for you. And we got so much closer. My dad, the way he communicated with me changed. He started to be open and honest with me about his struggles with depression and anxiety and his loneliness. And that's the reason why me and him are so close now. I clean for him every week. You know, I go over there and watch movies. My dad lives alone. He doesn't have any close friends or family members. But because I know what depression feels like, I can be there to help somebody who's in pain. And that's the important thing that I would not have been able to do for myself or for anyone else had I not been honest with myself. And that's why I encourage people to be honest with themselves. See, when it comes to mental health, I think there are four reasons why. Actually, hang on a second. Let me pause right there. Only one out of four people who struggle with mental illness are actually seeking treatment for it. And I think I know why. It's the stigma on mental health. Obvious, but I think it comes down to four main reasons. Number one, most people don't know the symptoms of what they're going through. Number two, they don't know how to get help. Number three, well, 2B, they can't afford the help. Number three, there is the stigma. They're afraid of being judged by their peers. And number four, they have a negative connotation of what going to rehab means to them. And so when you catch a cold and you start sneezing, everybody wants to make you chicken soup, put a towel around you, rally around you. But when it comes to mental illness, diseases of the brain that are invisible, it's so much harder just to even get to that point of wanting to get help. And I'm here to tell you all right now, it's a strength, not a weakness, to seek help, whether that's therapy, medication, 12-step programs, talking about it, etc. Everybody has skeletons in their closet. What matters is how and what you do to deal with them. You are no less than any other person for struggling or wanting to handle your mental health in a healthy way. See, there's someone listening to this right now who's alone, doesn't have the support system, and doesn't think that anyone cares about them. A stranger was the biggest inspiration in my life. One of the first to really make me believe that I had a place in this world, even though what I was going through. And so I'm here to tell you right now, there are people out there who really do care about you, who want to hear your story, who won't judge you for your situation, and will welcome you with open arms to help you heal and get better. It might be your friends, it might be your family, it might not. But even if it's not from the people you wish it would, understand that there are people that are there to help you. See, and like I said about the whole, it does get worse before it gets better, because it's like pouring alcohol on an open wound. You feel the burn. It's painful. But that's what exercising demons is about. It is painful. But you know what the good thing is? We can get to a place where we can find joy and fulfillment in everything that we do in our lives. It doesn't mean that we can't have goals or we can't have dreams or you don't have to shave your head and go to East Asia to become a monk. We can just start by doing the little things. Practicing mindfulness, you know, meditation, therapy, 12-step programs, journaling, asking yourself those questions, being present, being honest with yourself. It might be cliche, but I want you to know it's okay to not be okay. I'm going to say this one more time. It is okay to not be okay. Be honest with yourself. That's the first step to healing. I am not enlightened. I have struggled to get my life together since graduation and throughout this pandemic. I am still, to this day, fighting depression every single day from the moment that alarm goes off. But now, I can say I have the tools to fight back. I realize I don't have to be Elon Musk to be an inspiration to someone else. A simple cashier at CBS changed my life. And I believe we all have that power. Not all heroes wear capes. I am a work in progress. I, to this day and in the past, have struggled with anxiety and depression in my relationships with women and with mentors and in many other areas of my life. But I can proudly say I'm a work in progress, and I can give myself a pat on the back knowing that now, unlike in the past, I can be honest about it and I can grow. We can grow, and you all can hear me telling my story now as opposed to you being at my funeral. I want to say thank you so much to my friends for loving me, for your tears. I know it was painful for you guys to know what I was going through. But you were there. Your emotions, your tears, your words were real. You guys are the reason I am still alive right now. You are my shield and my sword, and I am so grateful to you all. Thank you so much to my teammates and my acquaintances, the ones who were always gracious to me, the ones who always supported me, even if we didn't talk all the time. You always supported me from afar. I don't believe in meaningless small talk. Every conversation has meaning if you're willing to see what it is. And now, the main event, of course, my vision for the future. As many of you know, to this point in my life, all I wanted to do through broadcasting was cover sports. However, now I want to expand my horizon and cover a lot more. Whether it's for my personal brand or as a full-time career, I want to continue to be a broadcaster and a journalist to really help end, talk about first and end the stigma on mental health. As I've said before, I've met so many people in recent years who have struggled, who are struggling with their mental health. And I want to help bring these people, help us get to a better place in our lives, full of joy and fulfillment. I want you guys to be honest. I want you to help you to be honest with yourself, to help me be honest with myself so we can all grow. Now, as for my podcast, which I didn't do a great job of marketing a couple years ago. Obviously, I was going through a lot. But in season one of the Rich in Facts podcast, which, by the way, has 6 episodes, I interviewed Division I athletes, professional journalists, college coaches. And that was fun. However, in 2021, I will bring the podcast back for season 2, but I'm going to expand much more beyond sports. I'm going to have local music artists. I'm going to have content creators, gamers. I will try to have some professional athletes and some coaches as well. But I really plan to expand the brand in 2021. And most importantly, for my YouTube channel, I have loved sports since I was in high school. But there's something I've loved even more, and it's had a much bigger impact on my life. I am a total geek at heart. Since I was a kid, I have been in love with anime and manga. I grew up watching Dragon Ball Z and Naruto every day and every weekend. I mean, 90% of my friend group, I met them through anime. We'd all meet up and watch weekly episodes together growing up. Now, as a kid, though, I got bullied for watching anime. So I kept that shit under wraps in high school and college. But what I admired about these Japanese cartoons was the long-running storylines. Unlike the episodic, you know, DC or a regular cartoon where the conflict starts at the beginning and ends at the end of the episode, these stories that revolved around young boys with a goal to be the best at something, to watch them in a long-running plot over the course of 10, 20, 30 plus episodes, to see them lose, to see how they would go through grief, how they would deal with the loss of dreams, of friends, close family members, how they would struggle over and over, but most importantly, watching them embrace the beauty and the struggle, me seeing it as a kid and even now, there to not be afraid to look stupid as I struggle for my goals and my dreams, to step out of my comfort zone, to see that was such an inspiration to me. And not just that, watching these cartoons helped me realize I need to and will treat everyone with kindness and respect, even if those people can do nothing for me. I will always be open-minded and gracious. See, anime hasn't just been a cartoon, you know, that I watch as a hobby or for fun. It's been a foundation for me in life as far as what it means to work hard for a purpose, what it means to be a good human being, what it means to respect yourself and to love others and treat everybody properly. Now, as anime has exploded into the pop culture and now athletes are wearing Dragon Ball Z kicks and Meg Thee Stallion and Travis Scott and Lil Uzi Vert are kind of repping the stuff in their music, many people have come up to me in recent years asking what anime should they watch. They're curious, they want to get into it, and some of you who haven't spoken to me might be into it as well. So, like with sports, I know a thing or two about the industry. I geek out on this stuff the way I would geek out on sports back in the day. I'm not as big of a sports fan as I used to, but I really tend to geek out on the stuff I'm really into. So I believe I can be of service. See, at the end of the day, as long as I am a journalist, broadcaster, content creator, I want my content to be able to give value. And I will continue to create content until I feel like I can't do that anymore. So I'm going to close out this video by saying thank you to everybody who has been there, who is here now. And just thank you so much for your support, for your love. Every conversation, every comment, I appreciate every single one of you. Every conversation we've ever had in the past, face-to-face, I'm talking the whole nine yards. Thank you all so much for being here. And until next time, please take care of yourselves and each other. Rich in facts. Oh yeah, one more thing. Shout out to my amazing producer, D. Gentasu, D. Blizz, who helped put this together. I've been ringing this guy through the mud, but you're awesome and you're the best, and I could not do this without you. So give a shout out to you as well. Give him a follow. He's a producer in the Boston area, music videos, this, that, all the nine yards. But with that, I'm going to bring this to a close. And yes, one more time, please take care of yourselves and each other. Rich in Facts, signing out.